You're listening to Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, featuring Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President of Public Policy at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. And now, here's Gary.
Hi, this is Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President for Public Policy at the James Dobson Family Institute. Welcome to our podcast, Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom. I'm glad you're with us. Be here every week and tell your friends about us. Wow, what a week in Washington, D.C. A lot going on here. If you're even paying a little bit of attention to the news, you probably see all the controversies and arguments. It's Washington, after all, you know, budget cuts and all the rest of it. But I think the most important thing that happened this week was, it really was the State of the Union address, but they don't call it that if it's in the first year of a president's term. And this is the first year of the president's second term. And so, but he's only been in the White House for a few weeks. So this was just billed as a speech to a joint session of Congress, but it was a State of the Union address. And of course, it's Donald Trump. He's not known for his brevity, folks. I believe that the speech he delivered on Tuesday night was the longest speech to a joint session of Congress in history. I should have probably have checked to get the exact amount of time, but I think it was an hour and 45 minutes, maybe even a little longer. That's usually pretty long for people to pay attention. But amazingly, the overnight polls showed that the people that watched, and it was a good audience, overwhelmingly were impressed with the speech. They said that they found it inspirational. It made them feel optimistic about the country's future. They thought that it was a unifying speech. And as I was reading those reviews, I was asking myself, well, why would there be such a positive reaction to the speech? And I think I know one reason. It's because Donald Trump did something really in spades that Ronald Reagan first did back in the 80s. I forget which year it was, but at one of the State of the Union addresses when Reagan was president, he invited to the speech in front of the Congress a local hero that had rescued a passenger in a plane that had crashed into the Potomac River. It was a terrible accident. People were killed, but somebody that was a bystander saw the plane go into the water, the icy water, without a second thought, dove into the water and saved lives. And Reagan brought him to the State of the Union, recognized him, everybody applauded and so forth. Well, that's now become a regular thing that they do here in Washington during State of the Union addresses. And Ronald Reagan would be proud to know that Donald Trump took what Reagan first started. And this past Tuesday, Trump had, I lost count, I think it might have been as many as 8 or 9 people that he recognized from the audience. And it was really amazing. These were inspirational stories. And I think the audience, particularly watching at home, found these stories to be very moving. Now, President Trump started off with a steel worker from Alabama named Jeff Denard. Mr. Denard and his wife have 7 children. I mean, that almost would get you recognized right there. These days, having 7 children is fairly unusual. But the story is even bigger than that, because Mr. Denard and his wife, in addition to having 7 children, have fostered 40 children in their home over the years. Now, I think Donald Trump was trying to send a message here. I've noticed that both he and Vice President Vance have been doing this. They've been talking up the need for strong families, the need for children to have mothers and fathers. They've been encouraging marriage. They've been encouraging young people to find somebody that loves you and that you love and bring babies into the world. They really are addressing head on some of the trends in our culture that haven't been very great. And I think this steel worker that was recognized on Tuesday night was an example of that. And it is notable. I mean, this is sacrificial. If you can think about, imagine the sacrifices that family had to make not only to raise their own 7 children, but to foster 40 others. Now, one of the other people that was honored, one of the families that was honored, is a name that I hope you recognize. It was the family of Lake and Riley. Lake and Riley, the 22-year-old nursing student, she was known for her strong Christian faith. She was sadly, viciously attacked and murdered in Georgia by an illegal alien who had entered our country during the former President Biden's open borders. This is what happens when you don't guard your borders. People come in, maybe just looking for a job. People come in escaping persecution. But a whole lot of other people are coming in because they're escaping law enforcement in the country they're living in. Or they're coming here because they mean us harm. If you don't secure your borders, you have no chance of figuring out who the good people are and who the bad people are. This murderer came to the United States, committed crimes while he was here, and was never arrested. You know why he wasn't arrested? Because he lived in sanctuary cities. He lived in New York that will not cooperate with federal immigration control. And when he left New York, he went to a sanctuary city in the state of Georgia. You know, sanctuary city, that sounds so nice. I mean, I've had Christian friends say, well, Gary, we should have sanctuaries for people, you know, where they can be safe. Well, sanctuary cities end up being cities safe for criminals, and they end up being cities that are dangerous to law-abiding Americans. And so Lake and Riley was viciously murdered. I want to play for you, I want to share with you how President Trump recognized the sacrifice of Lake and Riley's family.
With us this evening are Lake and's beloved mother, Allison, and her sister, Lauren. Last year, I told Lakin's grieving parents that we would ensure their daughter would not have died in vain. That's why the very first bill I signed into law as your 47th president mandates the detention of all dangerous criminal aliens who threaten public safety. It's a very strong, powerful act. It's called the Lakin-Riley Act. So Allison and Lauren, America will never, ever forget our beautiful Lakin Hope Riley.
Well, after that really moving moment, the president moved on, said, you know, made some other points in his speech about some of his proposals on law and order and so forth. And then he recognized and honored a man named Roberto Artez. Roberto Artez is a Border Patrol officer who saved the life of his partner when a drug gang opened fire on them. Now look, the normal natural reaction of human beings when they hear bullets is to run. But Mr. Artez did run, but toward the bullets to try to save his partner. I think the president brought up this particular case. And look, there's been other violence on our border that have affected people like Mr. Artez and his partner. But I think the president was trying to remind us that while we're all tucked in snug in our beds, people like Mr. Artez and his partner are keeping us safe. And they do so at great risk to their own lives. And their families know that when the father or the husband or the wife go off to work, for example, guarding our border, that their lives will be in danger. They may not come home. And so Mr. Artez was honored last night. The president said in his remarks to him that he had seen a video of when this had happened. I guess there were cameras along the border that caught all of this. And the president said, it was unbelievably courageous what you did. Well, you know, the president, his entire life, has stood with law enforcement, the men and women of law enforcement. And in the audience was a woman named Stephanie Diller, who was left with a one-year-old son when a vicious criminal, now listen to this, with 21 prior arrests, killed her police officer husband. When this happened a year or so ago, President Trump respectfully asked, he was a candidate then, if he could go to the funeral. He didn't want to make any remarks. He wasn't asking to speak. He just wanted to quietly go and pay his respects. And Mr. Diller, police officer Diller's wife, readily agreed, and the president did that. Ever since then, President Trump has stayed in touch with Stephanie Diller and her family. In fact, he has stayed in touch with virtually all the people that he introduced last night. This is one of those myths about the president, that he doesn't care about anybody, that he doesn't have any empathy. This is one of the most empathetic men I have ever met in my life. And you could see it last night if you watched the speech, that these weren't strangers being recognized in the gallery. These were people that the president knew because of tragedies that happened to them. And he has kept in touch with them. And he wanted to use the occasion of this speech in order to honor them in front of the nation. Now, as the evening went on, the president also recognized several parents, and this should never happen in America, several parents who have been through ordeals trying to protect their children from their own local school officials. You heard me right. When I was growing up, the local school, the principal, the teachers, the school board worked with parents. Today, parents are worried that their children are being exposed to weird ideologies and all sorts of inappropriate material. And it's often done without the parent ever being told, and certainly without the parent's permission. So I'm thankful that President Trump brought this up and recognized those parents. Some of them were specifically trying to safeguard their children from the radical transgender ideology that's in our school. Remember this, because a little later on, I want to share with you something else the president said that I think in its own way may have been the most important quote in his speech. Well, many of you also may remember the next name that I'm going to mention. Of course, I know you'll remember that President Trump, while he was campaigning last year in Butler, Pennsylvania, was almost assassinated. And by the way, we're still waiting for a full report on who the assassin was, what was his motivation. Did he act alone? Did he have accomplices? Something's wrong with our system when these things get shoved underneath the rug. The president himself has publicly demanded that the Secret Service turn over to him all of the information that they have about the assassination attempt on him. Well, when the shots rang out in Butler, Pennsylvania, narrowly missing the president, a centimeter one way or the other, and Donald Trump would have been killed in Butler, Pennsylvania, changing the course of American history. But there was more than one bullet. There were multiple shots fired, and some of those stray bullets went into the crowd that was sitting behind President Trump. When that happened, a man named Corey Comparatore, instinctively jumped up and ran over to his wife and daughters and fell on top of them, shielding their bodies. He was hit by a bullet that killed him. He was a veteran, a Christian, husband, and devoted father. That family will have a hole in their hearts forever. President Trump has recognized the family before. In fact, he went back to Butler, Pennsylvania, some months later, and he recognized this family at that revisit to the city. Last night, the wife and the daughters were in the audience at this address to a joint session of Congress. And this is part of what the president said to them.
To Helen, Allison, and Kaylee, Corey is looking down on his three beautiful ladies right now, and he is cheering you on. He loves you. He is cheering you on. Corey was taken from us much too soon, but his destiny was to leave us all with a shining example of the selfless devotion of a true American patriot. It was love like Corey's that built our country, and it's love like Corey's that is going to make our country more majestic than ever before.
Now I want to share with you what I think is probably the most moving story of the night. And it involves a little 13-year-old young man named D.J. Daniel. Now, I could try to describe what the president said, but this was a special moment. It just takes a couple of minutes. Why was the president of the United States talking to a 13-year-old young man in the audience at the speech this week? The young man was there with his father. And listen with me to the president's words.
Joining us in the gallery tonight is a young man who truly loves our police. His name is D.J. Daniel. He is 13 years old, and he has always dreamed of becoming a police officer. But in 2018, D.J. was diagnosed with brain cancer. The doctors gave him 5 months at most to live. That was more than 6 years ago. Since that time, D.J. and his dad have been on a quest to make his dream come true, and D.J. has been sworn in as an honorary law enforcement officer, actually a number of times. The police love him, the police departments love him. And tonight, DJ, we're going to do you the biggest honor of them all. I am asking our new Secret Service Director, Sean Curran, to officially make you an agent of the United States Secret Service. Thank you, DJ. DJ's doctors believe his cancer likely came from a chemical he was exposed to when he was younger.
Well, if we were living in normal times, all of these stories would have been completely accepted by the American people, admired by the American people. They would have been inspired by them. They would have been encouraged by them. Because we always love to hear about our fellow citizens overcoming great odds, doing the things we hope we would do if we were fighting a disease or if tragedy hit our families or if we needed to rise to the occasion and be a hero to help somebody else. And in fact, as I mentioned earlier, the polling that was done overnight showed that overwhelmingly, the American people loved this speech. And as I said, I think they loved it not because they were necessarily a big supporter of Donald Trump. In fact, the polling shows that many more people liked the speech than voted for Donald Trump. So he was reaching out to people that voted for Kamala Harris. But even many of them said, yeah, now, I agree with this. This is a moving. This is emotional. This is the kind of thing I want to hear more about in America. But something was going on in the room last night that even if you watched it on TV, you might have missed. And if you listened to the clips I've just played for you, you wouldn't have noticed at all because at the end of some of those clips, you hear what sounds like fairly substantial applause. But if you were watching last night, I noticed, and many other commentators, both liberal and conservative, noticed the same thing. Not everybody in the room was applauding as these American heroes, these sacrificial American families, were being introduced and told their stories. In fact, it's even worse than what I'm suggesting. If you go back and look at the tape, the video, and in fact, you can do that. You probably can go on Facebook or Google it and listen to the whole speech if you missed it and watch the camera and what you're seeing. You will see that on one side of the room, virtually everybody jumped to their feet every time one of these American heroes or one of these American families was introduced. They jumped to their feet and they applauded and they cheered. And you will also notice that in virtually every case, the other side of the room not only sat on their hands and did not applaud, but often were yelling out derisive things at the president while he spoke. You're not going to applaud a 13-year-old boy fighting cancer, a man that loses his life voluntarily trying to protect his wife and daughters, a police officer that dies protecting you, a border guard that runs toward the gunfire. These are not things you would applaud. Instead, you're trying to score some sort of cheap political points. The side of the room that was enthusiastically applauding, I have to tell you the truth. We aren't a tool of any political party at JDFI, but we do tell you the facts. And what happened this week was the side applauding and showing respect and in some cases praying for these American heroes were the members of the Republican House of Representatives and the Republicans in the United States Senate. Those were the ones applauding. And on the other side of the room, the people sitting on their hands, holding up goofy little signs, holding up signs that said, liar, criminal, when the president was speaking, were Democrat members of the House of Representatives and Democrat members of the United States Senate. Now, I find that outrageous. But I want to tell you, it's also very dangerous because in the House of Representatives, the people that thought this was an appropriate, honorable way to honor these heroes and American families in the House of Representatives, they're only four votes away from being the majority. Yeah, that's right. The people that didn't applaud will be running the committees, deciding what laws are passed, deciding what your taxes are, when you go to war, they're only four votes away from being a majority. In the United States Senate, there are 47 Democrats and 53 Republicans. And so there too, the party that was sitting on its hands is very close to being the majority party. I hope somewhere along the line I hope that President Trump is not discouraged from his efforts to try to bring the country together. He needs to keep doing it. But the Democrat Party, particularly the Christians that are in the Democrat Party, need to lead the way for some soul searching. Why in the world would this be the behavior of the elected Democrats in Congress? Now, I had said a little earlier that there was a line in the president's speech, and I related it to the transgender issue. But I think the line I'm referring to was, I believe, the most important thing the president said in the speech. And quite frankly, I think it's historic. And I haven't heard any commentator recognize it. Maybe that's why we're in so much trouble, that nobody seems to be particularly tuned in to what the president said. And again, it was in the context of the transgender issue. But really, it was more important. It was broader than that. Listen to this, and then I'm going to react to it.
And now I want Congress to pass a bill permanently banning and criminalizing sex changes on children and forever ending the lie that any child is trapped in the wrong body. This is a big lie. And our message to every child in America is that you are perfect exactly the way God made you.
Wow. Did you hear that? Perfect, exactly the way God made you. Now, my friends, I trust you understand that this is a biblical idea. This is a central biblical idea, and it's also a central idea to the entire founding of America. What the president is saying here is what we all believe, that we are made in the image of God. That's why we are perfect and made exactly the way God wanted us to be made. This idea means that it doesn't matter what the color of your skin is. It doesn't matter if you end up being a tall person or a short person, a skinny person or a fat person. It doesn't matter to God how much money you have in the bank, or the color of your hair, or any of those things. The Bible teaches us God made us in His image. And our country is built on the idea that made in His image, we have dignity, value, and worth that transcends anything that government can say about who we are. Our liberty comes from that God who made us in His image. It doesn't come from the kind of politicians we saw in the Congress this week sitting on their hands when American heroes were being introduced. And I really believe this is the big division in America. Now, look, we think the division in America is over the size of government and who should have higher taxes and securing our border. Well, sure, we're divided on all those things, but those things can be worked out and often are worked out by compromise. But this division that I'm referring to right now, this has no room for compromise. The country is increasingly divided between people like us and all of us at the James Dobson Family Institute and Dr. Dobson and Shirley and me and our whole team, that we're made in the image of God, that God exists, that truth is told to us by God, that God is the author of our liberty, that America will never be great again unless it's godly again. And I know this is hard to believe, but there are millions of people in America that reject all of that, that reject the idea that there is a God, that there's such a thing as truth, that we're made in His image, or that He has anything to do with America. And that is not a negotiable issue. And I thank that God, even if you don't agree with everything Donald Trump does, that we currently have a president that believes that God runs the affairs of man, and that that God saved his life in Butler, Pennsylvania, and that that God did so because he intends Donald Trump to work as hard as he can to make America great again. Well, that's it, folks, for this week. God bless you all. Keep tuning in here at Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, our James Dobson Family Institute podcast. God bless you all.
Subscribe to Gary Bauer's Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, where you find your favorite podcasts. Just hit the subscribe button to ensure you receive every episode.